Welcome back, everybody, to the TV Talk Machine podcast. This is episode 157, so many episodes. I'm Jason Snell, your co-host, and across the internet from me, chief TV critic at The Hollywood Reporter, your host, Mr. Tim Goodman. Hi, Tim.
Hello, Jason.
Back again.
Yes, less under the weather than last time.
That's good.
Mm-hmm.
That's helpful. Very good. You powered through last time.
I did.
We have so much to talk about that we're not going to talk about this time.
It's like overwhelming.
Well, so you did your list of the best shows of 2017, and that's what this episode is going to be about. You discussed your top 46 is the number this year, TV shows, which is, as you pointed out, less than 10% of the scripted shows that are made.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, you know, as the universe scales number of TV shows, you scale the number of your list.
And, absolutely.
But it's still the cream of the crop. So we're going to go through that. I have a couple bases to at least touch briefly before we go to that. There's some news. Just breaking.
Breaking news
reaching these shores. Remember when we said that Apple was going to give money to people you'd heard of to make TV shows? Well,
I do remember that.
Apple gave a series commitment without a pilot to Ron Moore of Battlestar Galactica and Outlander fame to do a show envisioning an alternate history where the space race never ended. So sort of my guess is sort of a present day, but alternate present day where we're, you know, maybe us and the Russians, the Soviets or whatever are still like in the solar system, but who knows? There are not a lot of details, but basically Apple backed up a truck of money to Ron Moore's house,
which we said they would.
And so the next Ron Moore space related, sci-fi related show to run will run on Apple's whatever. So there you go. Another one. That's three down for Apple. So
yeah. And I'm all over that idea. I think let's see what Ron Moore can come up with. I like the concept, or as they say in Hollywood. I love it already.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, go for it. But, you know, as you and I discussed, this is precisely pretty much the model that they're going to need to find famous people who have a track record of success that you can realistically hope come through on an idea without a pilot. Give them a serious commitment because you're playing catch up mode and go. And of course, we know that Apple is playing catch up mode even more than before because of this little merger between Disney and Fox.
Which is the other thing we should at least touch base on, which is, yes, so Disney buying out most of Fox, including. And this would be a whole show topic, and it will be probably next week.
Yes. Oh, my God. So much busy.
Because there's some serious questions about about Netflix I have. This merger puts not only the whole Fox library in Disney's hands, it puts 60% ownership of Hulu in Disney's hands.
That's a huge one to me.
Yeah, I mean, they already own a majority of BAMTech, the streaming service that started out as Major League Baseball's. I had somebody ask me this week, like, yeah, but does Disney really have any expertise in streaming? And I was like, actually, they now basically own a majority of two existing streaming setups, including one that is considered state of the art. Not bad. And then a huge library and all those cable channels and all of that. So there's so much that I want to talk to you about that deal, but it's going to have to wait until next week.
Next week we can discuss what it will be like when FX is part of the Disney family.
When Bart Simpson and Mickey Mouse have the same owner.
Yep.
But not now, because now is the time. Oh, there's one more thing. I Columbo'd myself.
Not easy to do.
Just wanted to mention, we talked about it last time, but I'll put a link in the show notes to your Black Mirror season 4 review, which posted so people can read it if they would like to read. They'll have that experience of like listening to the podcast and then reading the article.
Right. We did hold it from last week. In fact, after the podcast, I got news that they said, you know, it's going to go up too late. So let's hold it until like Monday. And I was like, okay, good with me.
Yeah. So it's out there now. People can read it. And read about Black Mirror, which premieres, what, January 28th, something like that?
No,
something?
December 29th.
Or, I mean, sorry, December 29th. I didn't mean January. I meant like right before New Year's. So.
Yeah, and that's why it's on my list, which we'll get to talk to in about a minute. But like, I had to make that decision. I've seen the show, so I had to make that decision because Given that it's Netflix, they all drop. And so technically, and you look, if you look at the episode guide order, that's a 2017 series. It's not a 2018 series.
Right. So, right. Now's the time.
And I think it's really deserving. So I had to squeeze it in.
You got to maintain the credibility of, of what was, you know, of the sanctity of the calendar.
Of the list.
Mm-hmm. End of the list. All right, let's go into the list then. So this episode, it's all about the list. And then next time we will talk about the ramifications. I assume you, are you ruminating about writing something about the Disney Fox thing? Is that?
Yeah, I really am. I've been reading what we've been doing.
Yeah, good reporting on this from
good
Jay
reporting. And Natalie Jarvie just came out with something today about the Hulu ramification, which I think is really interesting and underreported. Because, I want to write more about that, and I want you and I to talk more about that, because it absolutely makes no sense that Disney would be the majority stakeholder and then hold on to it when in 2019 they're going to do their own over-the-top streaming service.
Yeah, I mean, there's either they buy everybody out and they have... One speculation that I heard, though, I thought was interesting is they could have multiple services. They could roll services into Hulu, because Hulu, like Amazon, can offer like componentized, like you become a Hulu subscriber and then you can add in other things.
Uh-huh,
there are a lot of different options that they've got, or they could dump it, but they could also, you know, they could also use it as a separate service with different branding. Who knows, right? But they've got options, which is really interesting.
Yeah.
All right. The list. On to the list. I thought we would do this from the bottom up.
Okay.
Is
sure.
that okay with you?
Yeah, let's do it. Many thoughts on this list. So if you have random questions,
all right.
Yep.
So here we go. 46, the Western Godless on Netflix.
Yeah, it's it's funny. I'm going to do something next week. Probably I was going to do it this week, but it's too crowded. Do something next week. Maybe a whole critic's notebook on the methodology of these lists. You know, because on the one hand, you know, they're just lists. On the other hand, what I like about the Peak TV thing is that because every critic is now saying, you know, these are the best shows that I saw, then that means that we didn't all see the same 40 shows, and then all those whatever percentage are going to be on our list. There's 500 shows probably this year, and you know, we all saw different things or didn't see things. So technically, it kind of reinvigorates the best of 2017 lists, because people just saw different things. And then you factor in going back to reevaluate when we get to the top. I'll talk more about that. I think that was really an eye-opener for me this year. I thought I did a pretty good job of talking about why I just don't think there should be a random total put on this. I think you should you should choose as many good qualified shows as you can, and then create in that idea, in that concept of like, I'll put as many shows on that are worthy. You come up with your concept of your rules of why they're on there. And for me, these are all shows that are excellent in their own way for writing, directing, and acting, but also just they have to either be seen. A lot of people won't see them, so it's a service to remind them of that they're out there in this Peak TV world. But and to reward deserving shows without a limit on number, but also shows that, you know, weirdly stuck with you. And Godless is one of those, because it was only 7 episodes. It's you could just say, look, it's not as great as other ones that have put in 4 or 5 seasons, and this is the cumulative effect, you know, Game of Thrones or The Americans, where all this time went in world building. But at the same time, the 7 episodes that Godless did I were some of my most fun ones to watch, because I like Westerns, and but I don't like traditional Westerns unless you go back to like Clint Eastwood. And I thought that Scott Frank took a number of surprising twists and turns in this one, and despite how it might have been marketed by Netflix, I just thought there were so many great performances, and it had enough room to breathe and tell a complete story, and I thought it was pretty riveting.
So when you make a list like this, did you end up just sort of making a list of shows that you liked and counted and it was 46? Or did you kind of like move them around and then find a place to sort of draw a line and say, yeah, below here, they don't make the list?
Yeah, I had way more than 46, and I had to winnow them down. And I moved my list around quite a bit. In fact, I used to do a number of these things, as I think we talked about last year. And this year, or last couple of years, I've only done the one with Up Rocks and Alan Sepinwall. But the Up Rocks deadline was December 1. And I was in the middle of reevaluating some shows that I had seen in January and February, and I hadn't finished, and I hadn't really put, like, thought about them. My big thing is we don't get time to think. That was probably part of my Twitter piece. And I was really trying to think hard about this list. I really think it's important to do these. It's not just a toss-off. It's fun, but it's not a toss-off. So in that Up Rocks list, I have three or four different changes that I made for my list that ended up in my top 10. So I have these shows. I go back and I look at everything that I reviewed. I write down notes. And then I think about, from there, how do you rank them? And then, it's the minutiae we could probably talk about for a really long time, but you have your reasons for moving them up and down. And for ones making the list and other ones not making the list. And it's funny, I look at other people's lists after mine are done, and I see some theories that I don't necessarily believe in. Like some people will say, "Oh, I didn't think that I love this show. It's quantifiably a great show, but it this wasn't their greatest year." And I get that, but at the same time, in their not greatest year, were they greater than other ones you have on your list? That's my question.
So. All right. So for whatever reason, though, Godless ended up being the one that was on this, just on this side of the that line of demarcation between.
Yeah, it was. And then a number were left off.
Mm-hmm. Okay. 45, Jane the Virgin on the CW. Mm-hmm. You say it's one of the last great broadcast dramas.
Yeah. And what I was trying to get in there, too, is that, you and I have talked about this before, and I think we agree on it. I just think in this new... not just peak TV, and I tried to talk about Platinum Age as well. There's just too many great shows to invest in 22 episodes. And I don't care how great your writing staff is. You can't churn out 22 great episodes. You just can't. But I do love the ones I watch, and it's one of the last network shows that I actually even make a concerted effort to watch.
Hmm. 44, we talked about here, Smilf on Showtime.
Yeah, Smilf, it ended up being a little bit low because I still, I think it's interesting. I talk about, as I say here, personal auteur-style storytelling in the 30-minute space continues to be the formula that is bringing the best out of new talent on television, from Atlanta, Master of None, Breaking Our Better Things, Insecure. I really think that little box, that 30-minute space, is really kind of creatively interesting and has been ever since Louie came out. So I really like what Frankie Shaw is doing. I'm happy that Showtime actually has a show I really want to follow because they don't currently. And now Smilf fills that. I just think once it gets away from being young and having a young kid, it gets more interesting because it's just one of those things. I rated it a little bit lower just because sometimes some of the things that she marvels at are things that you marvel at when you're in your 20s, basically. And so it doesn't have the sort of gravitas and pedigree that some of these other ones do.
We moved to the Audience Network, a channel almost nobody gets unless you've got DirecTV or UVerse. It is Mr. Mercedes.
Yeah, really interesting. We get to go backwards in my theory as I try to keep my little description short because I had so many shows. But this was the third of my trifecta of series on here from outlets where you didn't expect somebody to do something great. And Mr. Mercedes was really interesting. Creepy as all hell. Stephen King adaptation, of course. But really great performances from Brendan Gleeson and Harry Treadway. And weirdly, two really interesting performances from Holland Taylor and Kelly Lynch, respectively.
42 is Sneaky Pete on Amazon.
Yep, Sneaky Pete is a good way to circle back to that theory, which we'll get to when we get into the top 10, about revisiting series that you will do early in the year. Now, this is one of my takeaways, Jason, that I came, maybe it's obvious to everybody else, but a year's worth of television... December 1 to, December 31st, whatever it is, that is, oh my God, if there is 500 shows in there, it's just, you forget things. And so I really think that when you review something in January, like I did with Sneaky Pete, when you go back and look at it, not only do you get to see it again with fresh eyes, and it I feel world weary, even though it's a year going back, not only do you get to see it from with fresh eyes, but you get to put it on like a bell curve now because you've seen all these other shows. And I think it Sneaky Pete makes the list. I think you could make an argument it could be even be higher, but it makes the list because a lot of shows that came out after that, it's just better than some of those shows. And the formula is familiar. I just think it's executed really well.
Number 41. Hey, we're back on the networks. It's Brooklyn Nine-Nine on Fox.
Yeah, and I should probably mention that this is the first time in, I think, 3 years that I incorporated the networks in with cable. I used to say they'd have their own playing field, but I think you and I might have mentioned on one of the podcasts that I just think I don't watch enough of network anymore,
right?
To have it separate list, so which works fine for me. The ones I do watch, I watch because they are of high quality. Qualitatively, they're should be on a list like this. And Brooklyn Nine-Nine is just, you know, just rock solid. There's nothing more you can say about that. Delivers week in and week out.
It really does. 40, staying on Fox with Bob's Burgers.
Yeah, I said this before during a Power Rankings, but this I think we need to start thinking about this as like a new American classic. Mm-hmm.
Really is. And I think it's great. And my daughter thinks it's one of the funniest things she's ever seen. So
yeah,
it spans, right? It spans.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, look who's at number 39. It's The Tick at Amazon.
Yeah, you know what? It's fun. In 2017, I think we all needed a little bit of fun, and that's what The Tick did.
That's right.
It really did. And it's a joy. I can't wait till the other second half of it comes out.
Yeah, I agree. 38, Netflix, Dear White People.
Yep, it's inclusivity, and people of color are making definite strides, but not by any means prevalent. So Dear White People, really strong, as I note in this ranking at 38, that it does tend to do like a lot of Netflix shows. You just get lost in the slush pile. But a lot of people haven't seen it, which is kind of why I like my list. I think there's a lot of shows on here people have not seen. So that's a good one to seek out. Good work on that show.
37, Catastrophe on Amazon.
Yeah, that's funny. I looked at Catastrophe and I was like, really? It was 2017? It just goes by so fast.
I know,
you know?
Right?
I can't tell you how many times I had to go to episode guides and like make sure that the actual date was in 2017.
This is like 6 half-hour episodes that dropped earlier this year, and mm-hmm. Yeah.
And as I note there, like it's falling on. This is the third year of me saying you need more episodes, but I think when they went for a darker turn, which was made the series, I think gave it a little bit more heft, and I kind of liked it. It was kind of like a you're the worst kind of twist, mm-hmm. I think it. Never had made it more clear than that they need more than 6 episodes. You're going to take on that kind of issue. You can't have the season end like mid-sentence. Mm. But I still love it.
36, another one of these surprises, Discovery with Manhunt Unabomber.
Yep, it is the second in the trifecta going backwards at 36. Out of 46. Yeah, really strong there. I think universally people kind of, when they watched it, said the same thing, like, wow, you know, a really good cast, strong acting, compelling scripts, gets through it pretty quickly. I think there was 8 episodes or something like that. Really strong. I think they're going to, as I said before, they're going to stick into this. I think they're turning Manhunt into a franchise. So it'll be Unabomber one time. Maybe it'll be somebody else the next time. But so far, at least as they kicked it off, very strong.
Next up, 35, You're the Worst, FX.
Yeah, pretty low down the list, but because people said it wasn't their favorite season. I just think it's a difficult series, and now we know they're going to have one more series to go out on, and I think they'll do a great job of that. But still a fun show.
I think that's, yeah. It was not my, I think it was a tougher season.
Mm-hmm, tougher.
But I appreciate them trying to do it.
Yeah, me too. That's why it's lower.
34. I think this show is eventually going to be recognized as being a classic. It's just going to take a little time. The Good Place, NBC.
Yeah, it's sort of a good and bad marker for network television for exactly what you said. I think this is going to be seen in the future as like a classic, but it's going to take people a long time to get there, like as you said. But that's because they're fleeing broadcast in droves, right? And they just, you just harder to find things these days. But yeah, to me, right there, perfect, emblematic, upbeat, super creative, surprisingly creative series week in and week out. I like that they only keep it at about 13 episodes per season. I don't like how they divide their seasons up, but such a good show. Fun times.
Yeah. 33, Say Goodbye to Orphan Black on BBC America.
Oh, my God. This, again, goes back when started at the end of November. But when I started going back looking at some of these shows, 2013 is when Orphan Black came out. 2013, as you know, as a tech person, that's 1999, basically.
Basically, it's the same.
I mean, basically, it's 1999.
It's a long time ago.
It's so long ago. But look, we discovered Tatiana Maslany. And as I tried to point out, I think the one salient piece of sentencing I had here was that it was a little show that could, and it did. A very strong series.
Yeah, absolutely.
And don't forget, it aired most of the time on Saturday nights, right? I mean, it's kind of funny.
Yeah. 32 is Casual on Hulu.
Yeah, Casual is a strong show. I myself had to really play catch up. I was a huge advocate for the series 1 and 2. And then when these series sort of settle in, there's not that much rallying you can do anymore. You just, you know, you're going to find it or you're not. Sometimes people won't even discover a show like Casual until it gets five seasons and goes off the air or whatever. But it's not the show that people think it is. And if you haven't even discovered the series and you're looking for something to get through that's funny and serious and has surprising turns, I just don't think you see a lot of shows like this on TV. Really solid work on Casual.
31, Insecure, HBO.
Yes, solid sophomore season. Some breakout stars on there. Issa Rae, sort of built on that. Again, a worldview you don't really see on television, but it's not here for that reason. It's here because it's just funny and original.
Glow is next, number 30 on Netflix.
Yeah, as you know, as I admitted in one of my power rankings, I was super late to Glow, and really loved it, and loved it in such a way that I was always surprised when people didn't like it. And I went back, I showed it in my class. And of my, I think it went out, that was 18 people in the class, and 15 or 16 like really did not like it. And I was like, what? Really? And to a person, they just didn't like Alison Brie. Some of them didn't like the whole concept. They weren't interested in wrestling and women's wrestling. I think for some of them, conceptually, it was a hard sell in that it was a period piece, kind of, or a drama piece in a specific era. But yeah, the Alison Brie popped up as the one that, and I've heard that elsewhere, but definitely heard loud and clear in my class. I actually think, for my purposes, I loved this show more than its 30 ranking. I'll put it that way.
All right. Number 29 is a, wow, 12 seasons. It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia on FX.
Nothing to say there, right? As I said, 12 seasons, still kicking everybody's ass. Still funny, even in its 12th season. And that's a Hall of Fame series right there.
28, season 2 of Stranger Things on Netflix.
Too low?
I don't know.
I wondered that. I wondered if people might think that was too low. It was a lot of people's top 10 list. And certainly a fun show. But yeah, had to be on there. Really strong. Oh, next one up, I know you're going to have something to say.
27, The Handmaid's Tale, Hulu.
Which has its 27th ranking by a very smart response that from Jason and talking to me in Vancouver and making me race to finish up and go, oh, yeah, I see what you're saying here. Yeah,
I've heard that it is not that there are moments to hold on to, but I just, in the ones that I watched, oh boy. But yeah, I mean, no, I have no doubt at the quality of it. It's a very well made show. Just, it's hard for me to.
Yes, let the record reflect that Jason Snell drove this show down.
Yeah, take that Emmy winning drama. Number 26, a little bit of a contrast. Netflix's American Vandal.
Oh yeah, like so much fun. I and lots of people still haven't even heard of this show, haven't seen it. Again, suffering from there's just too much shows out there. And if you already have Netflix, you're like, what? I didn't even hear about this. Like I said, a spoof of the docudrama, Gloriously Ridiculous. And Jimmy Tatro is one of my favorite breakout stars. And just if you haven't watched it yet and you've watched The Jinx or Making a Murderer, you will love it. You will die laughing.
Yeah, that'll be a good just over the holidays. Watch American Vandal. Mm-hmm. It's easy. It's fun. 25, Mindhunter on Netflix.
Yeah, hard to say that a series is like from Fincher and that's about serial killers is it was a pleasure to watch, but it was. It was also one that I think is a good time to bring this up. When you go back and when I go back and I reevaluate shows, I always look at my viewing habits. Like, how long did it take me to get through this? How many did I watch for the review? How quickly did I come back after I watched enough for the review to watch more episodes, and did I finish them when I came back, or did I have to come back to it two or three times to finish it? And Mindhunter was I had seen enough episodes to do the review note about it, and then just kept watching on my own and really coming back and being really entertained week after week with Mindhunter, because it's even though it's about the birth of the profiler department, the behavioral sciences department at the FBI, it's not gruesome outside of the pilot, and I really liked it.
24, People of Earth on TBS.
Yeah, what's the purpose of a list, Jason, if you can't put your own particular quirks on it?
That's right.
Mm-hmm. People of Earth, I'm banging that drum every time, two seasons in. It's quirky and fun, and I just love it. I love that this show exists on television, even if nobody's heard about it, which is no longer really like a lament because nobody's heard of a lot of shows. But this is a delight. I just urge people. I know that everybody has a little list of things that they still have to get to. Move People of Earth up a few notches.
23, Silicon Valley, HBO.
Yeah, we're kind of taking it for granted now in this fourth season, but you know, again, sometimes you have to go back, and if your memory fails, you start reading your own review and think, yep, this is why I loved it. So strong, middle of the pack series, not middle of the pack as far as greatness, but middle of this 46 pack.
Yeah. 22, The CW with Crazy Ex-Girlfriend.
Yeah, there's another one that I think benefits from being free to admit that you're behind on things because of peak TV. I was a big, loud proponent of the show in the first two seasons. And then you kind of just not take it for granted in this case, because Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, who knows? You know, it's always a mystery that it's, or almost a miracle that it's on the dial. I really had to play catch up. It's probably why it didn't end up. I forgot one time, but it also is probably why it didn't end up on some of the power rankings earlier. Another good reason to have a end of the year list, you can sort of fix your mistakes or your oversights during the year. And that's exactly what I did with Crazy Ex-Girlfriend.
21, Humans on AMC.
Yeah, second season of coming back and being really strong, 2 years apart. You're a fan of Humans, I
believe. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's good. It's it makes some unexpected turns. They got into I thought that season two was not as strong as season one. There was this whole thing about like the legal case of whether these creatures were human or, you know, or sentient or whatever, and laws applied to them or not, that kind of went into a cul-de-sac and just kind of nothing happened with that, which is too bad. But it's still kind of a fascinating sort of near future, asking a lot of big questions. Some interesting new characters. Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, and I think that shows like this, you're a huge science fiction or at least a genre fan, and they only work if you actually like the characters, and if the characters are on the page and they're well written and you can get an actor and actress to bring them to life. I just think I liked everybody on Humans, season one and season two, and I think for some you make a good point, and I think that they can look into the future and say, okay, we kind of know what we're doing here and we can make more than one series out of it, obviously, and now we might expand out.
20, Guerrilla on Showtime.
Yeah, you're like such a you know, it's I think it's a, it certainly qualifies as a show that I would argue that 90% of the people haven't seen yet.
Totally.
But it's worth it. You can get through the whole thing. One of my favorite things to say about this series is that when Idris Elba is like the fourth best actor, as far as like that, just in that, not like in over a lifetime span, but in that performance, you're just like, okay, yeah, you're Idris Elba, you're fine. But look at these other people who are killing it. Then you really have something. And the story is great. Acting's amazing. The writing is super strong. I think John Ridley, who gets so much credit for doing American Crime on ABC, this more compact, more adult version of what he's doing, I think it just gets overlooked, but I think it's better. Hmm.
19. We're in the top 20 now. Here we go. Woo-hoo, 19. Fargo. 20. Fargo, not in your top five like the last couple of years.
Yeah, I think it was a better year. And I tried to point out here, too, that, you know, I'm really proud of my top 10. And probably the most proud I've been of my top 10 in a number of years. But I knew it wasn't going to pop in there eventually. And when it didn't, it was like, okay, how far does it fall? And how do you justify what's above it? But for all the 20 shows, but I just tried to say, yes, it was the weaker of the three. But given that the other two were number one on my list, I mean, that's really not much of a knock.
Number 18, Master of None on Netflix.
Yeah, I kind of keep coming back to this theme about the show that it traffics in joy, because I think that's what gets overlooked by it a lot. A lot of simple pleasures in life for this one, even though they have some serious storylines or dramatic storylines, if you will. It's still kind of a silly show without being throwaway silly. I think just people enjoying life, and I don't think you see that whimsically very much on TV.
I agree. Number 17, Mr. Robot.
Yeah, like maybe the comeback show of the year?
Maybe.
Super strong. I love it because season one, I was, you know, kind of a masterclass in doing such a great first season, completely unexpected, revolutionary in a lot of ways, out of nowhere, in a summer on USA, a channel you wouldn't expect it to be. So many what developments on Mr. Robot, which made that first season so special. And then the second was just like, not as good, but not as good. You really want to champion those shows if they can come back. And I was really worried about season three, and I love it. And super clever, smart, great performances. Really happy that Mr. Robot is back to full strength.
Yeah, I agree. I agree completely. 16, here's Black Mirror on Netflix.
Yes, and as I said in the thing, I'm ranking a series that literally 100% of the people, except for critics, have not seen yet. Won't be able to see until the 29th. You know, another 2 weeks from now. But you will see when you watch season four that it hasn't missed a beat. And when I was really trying to emphasize in my review, which is available, obviously, but what I was trying to emphasize in the review is that stop having people criticize the show for not being as good as the last episode or the last whatever, because the tech paranoia part either wasn't ratcheted up or some of the quote unquote like predictive stuff became true. He was never really trying to predict stuff. And then post that, I would say that if you're looking for Black Mirror to have five episodes of San Junipero, that's not going to happen either. I think that was a real luck of the draw on that. I mean, everything aligned to make that show, that episode, great. But there are elements, if you liked elements in San Junipero, which I would argue were prevalent in other, or present in other previous seasons, in individual episodes, you'll certainly find it this season in Black Mirror.
15, The Americans. FX, another often frequently inhabiting the top five for you down here at 15.
Yes, and this year falling off a lot of people's lists entirely. Just to be clear, lots of people did not have The Americans at all, which I just am stunned by that. It's a bridge season. They're going to finish it out next year. And it's just really hard to do that because you're not going to end. You can't really end on a cliffhanger because you can a little bit, but the end of the series is your cliffhanger or your big end. So they just, but I think it's important maybe more than other people, to like say, okay, if there's emotional fallout and it, and you can't just have a person react to something and the next episode they're back to normal. The Americans has always done a good job of that. Let the fallout happen over a number of episodes. And sure, you can make the argument that they brought people back in. We haven't seen in a long time, which is true. But the tone was good for me. I didn't think it was a slow season. Let's put it that way. But and to not be on people's list is, I don't even know where that's coming from.
All right. 14, Legion FX.
Yeah, Legion's another one where it could have been higher or could have been lower. So I had to go back. I mean, like, if you're thinking about, like, you know, qualitative methodology, I went back and said, what were my feelings when I watched this show at the time? Because you're so far removed from it. What did it do differently than anything else was doing at the time, which kind of makes it stand out? I think there were big leaps from Noah Hawley and what he's used to. And of course, I made the Twin Peaks comparison because I was wrong saying you were not going to see anything as weird as this on TV. Definitely saw something way weirder. But this is just more coherent, less masturbatory. And I think it just worked. And I think people, when they catch up to Legion and they binge it, I don't want to do the whole Twin Peaks comparison, but I think people just love it on its own as a series. I'm excited about where it's going to go. And it's freaky. It's super freaky.
Yeah, I think it's really good. I can't wait to see where Twin Peaks ranks in your top 10, Tim.
I know, right? It's getting exciting time.
I know. Number 13, Better Call Saul.
Yeah, Saul, interesting. The best of its seasons was this one. And I think it's morphing into the show we thought it was going to get towards, which was Breaking Bad. I think it's amazing that it got this far. And it's just crap. I hate to fall into, I see it on other people's lists and they're like, it's as good as the original Breaking Bad. No, not even close. I mean, close enough to be like remarkable, but in the end game, nope.
Number 12, Veep.
Yeah, I had a little guilt for sliding Veep down that far, but that, I think that gives you a little sense of how great 2017 was. probably the funniest show on TV, and probably the best comedy on TV. So I loved it.
Stacked out here outside the top 10. Amazing. Mm-hmm. Big year. Can't wait to see what's in the top 10. Number 11, The Deuce, HBO.
Yeah, just camping itself right outside the top 10. It made a lot of people's top 10 list, which is good to see. I think it was a divisive series in that it didn't make a lot of people's lists at all. But yeah, I think that David Simon and George Pelicanos not doing something. It's so difficult, and he's explained this way better than I will ever do. But, and he's very wonky, of course. But those guys took a look at the porn industry and said, let's make a really thoughtful look at the porn industry without slipping, especially if you're on HBO where you could do that, into the basically making porn. Like, you know what I mean? You're like, it's a slippery slope to sort of document it dramatically, this movement, without having so much titillation in it. And they definitely never make you forget that this is a transactional, ugly world.
Okay, here we go. We're in the top 10.
Woohoo!
I know, right? Number 10, Planet Earth 2 from BBC America.
Yeah, and just before we get into the 10, I'm going to say that the reason I think I was the most proud of this list, because I think it's really diverse, and I fought hard for the really most diverse ones, but I just think it's, there's shows on here that you are personal favorites that I think for me were top 10s, but ones that could not be anywhere else but in the top 10. And I think Planet Earth 2 is certainly that show. If you look at anything below 10, a lot of lists would have replaced Planet Earth 2 with those shows. That's all I'm going to say. But Planet Earth 2, if you watch it, it's just, as I said, television at its finest. That is an unbelievable accomplishment, and hopefully people will have either recorded it or buy it on DVD or whatever, put it on your 4K TV, whatever you got to do. It's just such an amazing documentary.
Number nine, Get Shorty on Epics.
Yeah, probably entering the realm of, like, really? Kind of level. But, you know, as I said here, it's probably the most surprising series since Fargo season one on FX, because they both were, like, terrible ideas on paper. You can't imagine that it would be pulled off well. And in the case of Epics, you don't have the pedigree that FX had. And so this concludes the trilogy of Unabomber and Mr. Mercedes and Get Shorty of three series on this list. This is the highest one, of course, where they're from outlets you probably don't get. You know, I think only now, I mean, people get Discovery, that's everywhere, but if people miss it, Manhunt Unabomber is actually on Netflix now. So, I'm hoping people will eventually get to see Get Shorty, because it's so good, and Chris O'Dowd is amazing, and it's just the performances. Ray Romano was excellent. Just the writing, really sharp, and certainly one of the few real unexpected treasures of the year.
Yeah, who would have thought that remaking Get Shorty as a TV series, you know, readapting it, however you want to view it, it was already a movie. And it was like, no, we'll do a TV show of it, and that it would turn out.
Yeah, and also, just to put even a bigger thing, when they were explaining it, when we hadn't seen it yet, they're like, it's inspired by, but not, you know. So it was like, oh wow, so it's, you're like a third Xerox copy of something.
Nope.
So,
number eight, Game of Thrones.
That's a shocker that's in there, right?
Yeah, who would have thought? That Game of Thrones is in the top 10. Of course it is.
Have you looked at a lot of people's top 10 lists? Game of Thrones is not on there.
Yeah, I take it for granted, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I don't look at anyone's top 10 list but yours, Tim.
That's a great answer. It was getting lower and lower because I had so many shows that I wanted to be on there. But at the end of the day, as I said in here, at the end here, no series made me look forward to the next episode like Game of Thrones. There's so much value in that. I think we take it for granted now. It did all this world building. It could be much more nimble in its storytelling. And I felt like it was such a payoff season that I loved it. But to not have Game of Thrones on your top 10 list is, I don't know what TV you're watching.
All right, moving on to number seven. It's Better Things on FX.
Yeah, and Better Things is so much more than a comedy. Again, it's in that 30 minutes, that space where so much great work is being done. Again, obviously, you have the problematic in that you have the Louis C.K. connection. That's going to be a disqualifying factor for some people. But, I think Pamela Adlon's reaction / non-reaction, and still hasn't said anything really about it, is troubling. But I think you can definitely separate him from this, but also his, not just his talents, but I mean, you have to keep his talents in here, because he wrote on every one of these episodes, but she directed everything. She stars in it. It's really loosely based on her life and it's her vision. And Pamela Adlon, I think it's such a great meditation on, what it's like to be a woman and raise girls and to have a parent. So you're a parent, you're a daughter, you have your own daughters. It's generational. It's just, she did such a good job in the first season, but this second season, it's one of the most acclaimed series on TV this year, and rightfully so.
All right. Number six, Patriot on Amazon.
Yay. Okay. My favorite pick in the entire list. And as I said earlier when we started, that methodology wise, okay, so I think people who don't like Patriot, who watched it, other critics, I would really love to have that truth pill and say, how many did you watch and did you finish? Because this is the world we live in. I think people freely admit that they don't finish a lot of shows. It's hard. That's one of my mantras. It's like, I want to finish more shows. I want to stop starting shows. Told my bosses this. I want to stop starting so many shows, and I want to finish more shows and write about those, because in the current world we're in, peak TV, where we're just churning things out. We're rats on a wheel, and we owe more to criticism, and we owe more to the work that's being done, and the work, the art that's being churned out on television. I shouldn't say churn, that's a negative, but art that's being made on television, we owe more to follow it all the way to the end. So Patriot came out in February. I loved it. Huge fan of it. But I didn't finish it. And because it was enough. And like, yes. And then it was on my mini long list of other critics have these two of like, hey, some people, there's the list of shows we haven't seen for all of us. It's pretty long. But Finnish series, I would argue that list is 10 times longer than the didn't watch list. And I went back and I rewatched and I finished everything. And I was even watching episodes that I had already seen. So I watched, rewatched Patriot in its entirety and then finished it, of course. And I would say this, it suffers from two things. It started in February on a busy year on a platform that people were able to watch the pilot a full 2 years before they actually could watch the rest of the episodes, or almost a full 2 years. And it's quirky in its tone. It's very stylized, but it never misses that beat. And I think if you look at Patriot like I did with fresh eyes and rewatch it, or watch it all for the first time and watch it all the way through and binge it slowly, you will see it's beautifully done. Like the directing from episode to episode is amazing. I think Steve Conrad did a great job writing it. He directed many of the episodes. Michael Dorman, there's so many good performances, but Michael Dorman here as this agent who's, I don't want to ruin it for people, but the folk music element is so funny and also so touching at the same time. Like, I'll never stop laughing when he sings these folk songs that are basically, you know, way, way too revelatory about black ops from the U.S. government, which I think is a great thing. But it's just beautiful to see. Like, I didn't realize how well it was directed. I didn't remember how well it was directed. And then the arc of the performances and so many of the supporting characters, just so much nuance went into it. It's just, again, to me, I'm so happy that I was able to come back in this 500 scripted universe and find something that's either ignored, never seen, or I think more accurately, Jason, people watch three or four episodes of it and they never watched it again. Hmm. And if you watch it all the way to the end, I think the cumulative impact of Patriot is pretty amazing.
All right. Number five, the last season of Halt and Catch Fire on AMC.
Yeah, it's what a beautiful payoff. Again, here you have to just start at the beginning. It's like, this is like Rectify all over again. So we, you know, and a number of episodes, people were like, I don't really know about Orphan Black. Sure, I'll go back and start from the beginning. But Rectify and Halt and Catch Fire are the two, I think, best examples of series where people never really watched it. But it's finished. So both of them are finished. They're on the shelves. They're in the books. And you can go and pull them off the shelf, pull them out of the ether, and watch them. And I think you're going to see this magnificent transformation. I mean, I think Rectify was great beginning to end. Halt and Catch Fire was a kind of hit and miss first season with so much potential. And then I think it really pivoted and really started finding itself. But it was always on this discovery process of discovery about what kind of series it wanted to be. And I think the end part, I think season four, if for anybody who loves technology but also just great performances, it just, they nailed the landing. Let's put it that way.
All right. Number four, back on Sundance Now.
We may have reached the 100%. I've never heard of this and didn't watch it. The level of the list. Back is honestly, I think there is so much brilliance in this back that it's hard to overstate. But I think in my haste to overstate it, people will say, oh yeah, that was really good, but four? But no, you just have to, I mean, I've seen so many shows, again, in the 30-minute space, so many talented people are working, but Simon Blackwell is a brilliant writer, He did Veep. He wrote for Veep. He was in the British version of In the Loop, the movie, and The Thick of It. Armando Iannucci, also a little bit of the Peep Show. Peep Show actors, David Mitchell and Robert Webb, were in that, basically the show made for them. And they're in this. And I think this is such a great concept of having really great characters, really funny story, which is interesting, rather than joke, and just beautifully funny frustration, just clever and creative. Really a surprise. Back was maybe the biggest surprise.
Mitchell and Webb, love those guys.
Yeah, might be the biggest surprise of 2017.
Number three, the Vietnam War, PBS.
Yeah, what do you say there, right? I mean, it just, it deserved that spot. Ken Burns is brilliant. And I think Vietnam War is getting credit across a lot of platforms, which is good. I had two non-scripted series in the top 10, which I think is, and I had one in last year too, but really strong. But Planet Earth 2 and Vietnam, really must watch TV shows.
Nothing quotidian about a Ken Burns TV show.
Nothing quotidian.
That's an old school TVTM reference. That's from like episode 9 or something. The Ken Burns water. You drink it, you're smart. That's what happens.
You drink it, you're smarter. Quotidian.
Number two, the A Word on Sundance.
Yeah, and I think I would just qualify the statement I said earlier about number four, Back, being the biggest surprise of 2017. I don't think that something like Patriot is a big surprise because it's on a bigger channel, and they throw it out there in the audience like, hey, we're thinking about making this show. So in 2015, you could have gone on your Amazon Prime account and looked at the quote-unquote pilot for Patriot. I don't think anybody got to the end, as I said, but I don't think... And Back is the biggest surprise. But see, this is a season two for the A Word. And last, you know, it was number six last year for me. And out of 38 in 2016. But it moved up to number two this year. So it's not a surprise because it's an existing series. It's out there. Though for most people, the whole series will be a surprise. They've never heard of it. They can't find it. I don't have a very good vocabulary to describe how great this show is. I mean, it is an emotional wallop, and not because it's tragic and like, it's not because like there's a big death and you're going to be devastated by it. I think it's just the world that they create, Peter Boker creates in the season one. And the ambition was they had too much story in season one. Well, once you watch season one, which is only six episodes, you can come back and you can move into season two. And the payoff is even more dramatic. It's unlike anything you've ever seen on television because it's set in this really rural part of England. They're familiar characters throughout. I mean, character actors, but Christopher Eccleston's performance is magnificent. And I'm trying not to use that word as a toss off. It is a magnificent performance from Christopher Eccleston, and he's just, it's a masterclass in like what a great actor is. But just the emotional wallop, nuance, great soundtrack, so much going for it. I really hope people will track down both seasons of The A-Word. Definitely watch the first one first.
And last, and not surprising, it's the only one left. It's got to be. It's not Twin Peaks The Return, people. It's The Leftovers.
Yeah, there's only one left, The Leftovers. And again, when I was saying... I tweeted out that of my top 10, there's a potential that people haven't seen eight of these because, you know, we take Leftovers for granted that people know about it. That's for sure. They've heard about it. They've heard critics talk about it. But a lot of people haven't watched it. So it would qualify as an unseen series for a lot of people. And then it closed out its third season with, I just think there was just so much weirdness, but in a good way, really impressive storytelling. Really creative, and again, that word is the sort of the breadth of that word is almost misplaced here. So much creativity went into this. Like you can't imagine what they tried to do. And when you do see it, you'll be like, what the hell? What are they doing? And not like Twin Peaks, and not even like Legion. It's just like, what? And it's a good way. It's the decisions that really smart writers make, and directors too, but in this case, TV being a writer's medium, it's really smart decisions that were they made on the paper after the book, because the Tom Perrotta's book was just season one. And so it's just, I don't even know what to say. It's just incredible. And for example, I will just say this. There's one episode where a lion eats God. So if you can figure that out.
All right.
All right. So there you go.
To the leftovers.
People are like, okay, he said a lion ate God.
You gotta,
what?
You got to see it now. That's all.
Yeah, you got to see it.
You just got to see it.
Mm-hmm.
All right. What else should we say? Do you have, we should say your colleague, Dan Feinberg, has another list of his top 10.
His top 10, right.
Mm-hmm. He constrained himself to 10. I would say that all but three of his 10 are not on your list,
mm-hmm.
but the other seven are. So there's some agreement there.
There is some interesting agreement. Placement different, but agreement nonetheless.
And Alan Sepinwall's consensus list has a lot of similarities, but also a lot of differences, unsurprising, because it's sort of fascinating, actually, to look at that and see where you diverge from the consensus and where you are fitting in with the consensus. And it's a good mixture.
Yeah, it's that is, and with 55 critics in that poll, it is kind of interesting how it's blossomed into that aggregate of taste. But yeah, I think there's on this list of 46, which is not the most I've ever had, because I also had separate lists when I had big numbers. This is 46 total, including broadcast. But I'm really proud of this list, particularly the top 10. And I think there's a lot of surprises throughout, but for some people there might be six or eight series even in the top 10 that they haven't seen.
Hmm. It's cool. It's fun.
Yeah.
And consider this a list. These are shows you should seek out that made the list. You use it as a guide.
Use it as a guide. And in this crazy world, that's what we need, right?
That's right. It's a power rankings writ large. I mean, like really
large. Yes.
All right, well, so next week we're going to talk about Disney and Fox. We're going to, who knows what else is going to happen in the next week. There could be even more breaking news, more people getting fired. Anything can happen. And we'll also talk about maybe a little window into Christmas music, maybe holiday music a little bit.
Oh, yes. I apologize for anybody who enjoys my playlist, but I'm... because I said I'm working on it. I have been, but this weekend it will be fine. I will finalize it. So heading into the stretch run, if you're a Christmas fan, you will be able to have 2 weeks of solid listening.
Very good. Very good. All right. Here are the ways to reach us. podcast@tvtalkmachine.com in email. Tweet at us at TVTM. Facebook.com/... What is it? /TV Talk Machine. It's the simple one. Mm-hmm. That's so great. We own that. Yep. And I'm Jay Snell on Twitter. Tim is Bastard Machine on Twitter, but don't tweet at him. He doesn't want to see it.
He's not there.
TVTM is the way to reach us on the Twitter. And that's it for this edition of the TV Talk Machine. Tim, it's been a pleasure as always.
Thanks, Jason. See you, not next year, but see you in a very important wrap-up to 2017.
Yes, we'll be back in a week, everybody. Goodbye.